Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, old man Witter gave us a slap in the head this week, but we will win. Soon enough, we'll be digging in the dirt again, and that's what today's show is all about. It's gardening. We welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. You want to talk about gardening? It'll make you feel so good, even if you are up to your knees in snow still. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email your gardening question to voxpop@wamc.org. Fred, Dale Isla, Greg, Bob, your gardening calls right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back our expert gardening crew to talk to you. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch all join us to answer your questions about the garden. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 if you want to get a question in today. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or email, or call 800-348-2551. It is the gardening show. The dream team is here. Greg, Bob, Dale Isla, Fred, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Boy,
thanks
what
for
a
having us.
Storm, huh?
Lovely almost spring day.
It feels like it today.
Like it doesn't look like it.
It didn't feel like it 2 days ago. And I came in and you were all talking about just horror stories of trees snapping. And Dale Isla, you got a lot of snow back where you are.
Yeah, we got about 2 feet. And as a skier, I'm ecstatic.
Oh, that's nice.
We could hear the pines up in our woods snapping away as the heavy snow was breaking them. But, you know, that's what heavy snows do. And the woods will be fine.
It's funny. You know, in my neighborhood, I expected it. I expected all of those old trees to go down. And it really wasn't too bad.
You know, there's microclimates. And things vary from very short distances. You know, sometimes one side of a house to another, the microclimate can vary. So where I am, there was a lot of tree damage, but geez, you go down a road a half a mile and there wasn't.
Yeah, you also get a chance to discover weak defects in plants like trees during storms like this. And, you know, a lot of the ones, about 90% of the plants that fail during storms have defects, which if you spotted them early on in the development of that woody plant, you could correct a lot of that from structural pruning.
And Greg, you got maybe the most of all out there, right?
You know, the Berkshires, it kind of was a big wave. So the Taconics got up to 3 feet, and then the valley at the south end, Great Barrington, maybe just 14 inches or so. And then as you went into New Marlborough and up toward Lenox, again, 2 to 3 feet.
That's a lot.
Yeah, we got like 14 to 16 inches at our house.
So. Yeah, it's amazing.
And that much at Landis Arboretum as well.
I also heard you all talking about something that I noticed. What the last storm, prior to the one Tuesday into Wednesday, not as much precipitation, but in my neighborhood, that's when the branches came down.
Yep. And we also had more failures in terms of branch breakage at the Arboretum on the last storm. And it really came down to, I think, the fact that the snow from the last storm stuck to the trees quite.
It was a little colder.
It froze onto the trees.
This last one was a little warmer, and the stuff just kind of sloughed off pretty quick.
It did. That's what I noticed. It started to get warm, and a lot of that snow started to drop. It was like you had to watch your head in the woods.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, snow bombs.
All right, let me ask one personal question from my personal gardener. She lost, not in this storm, but the one a couple of weeks ago, just one branch of a nice lilac just snapped off.
Okay.
No, one major, I don't know what they call it, the stalk.
1 liter or stem, yep.
Will that heal and grow?
Well, woody plants don't heal. They seal or they compartmentalize. So will it recover? Yes. Your timing on this is actually pretty good because you want to For rejuvenation pruning, you prune them when the buds begin to swell, but before they grow. So in essence, those larger canes, we would tell you, generally take out a third of those larger canes every year. So Mother Nature sounds like she took out one of them for you.
That
so
is it.
It saved you a little work.
And if it's nicely budded, flower buds on the end of that, not too late to harvest those and force them.
That's true. They would grow out, and you would think it would be a new plant, all
really?
From stored energy. I mean, then, of course, that will fizzle, and it would fade out after it
does
that.
There's something else you can do when you go home today.
Yep. So you do want to look at that broken stem, though.
I see that.
It's pretty quick.
Look at the broken stem
pruning.
And make a little clean cut there. And if it's broken sort of like 3 or 4 feet up, just random, then you could cut that back 6 inches to the ground.
All right. I'll have my wife play the show back when she gets home from work.
There you go.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today with Greg, Bob, Fred, and Dale Isla. This email came in from Tom and Gardner. How do we repair damage? Oh, this is interesting. How do we repair damage to our lilac bush after the recent snowstorm?
Yep. So
we went
sort
through
of,
it.
Sort of what we just said there. Yeah. You know, you're cleaning out the broken branches. If they're broke haphazardly, when I say haphazardly, I mean not cut back to a corresponding lateral that will take over, which Mother Nature rarely does. You are going to want to just cut that back to the ground. A lot of those old stems, if they're broke, you can cut them down to 6 inches. The good news is that the plants are going to recover, and if it had to break, I think the timing on it, it's actually pretty good for rejuvenation.
Yeah, they push up new growth right from the ground, right?
They will.
So you take this older stuff off, and that encourages it to push stuff right up brand. It's almost like rejuvenating the plant.
Exactly, or at least partial rejuvenation. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I've heard some a few smaller trees, maybe that were newly planted in the last couple of years, falling over completely. So not snapping, but the entire root ball came up, and then it could be the Governor Cuomo story of the spruce tree.
We're going to push him up.
Yes.
Thanks for bringing that one up.
Well, the fact that you do see plants sometimes falling over. We had a Dalgo crabapple, which has a really large fruit. It's a great one for making crabapple jellies. We had one, unfortunately, go down just from the storm, and but it didn't break. You could see the root ball is kind of raised up on one side, and it's laying there, and we're planning to stake that back. And I've had good luck, and especially this time of year, when you stake them back, you're going to stake them for about a year and then remove
sometimes
those stakes.
Sometimes that takes a real strong ground anchor to hold that
up. It
too.
Does.
You know, a wimpy little stake sometimes won't do that.
That's right.
Almost like what they're doing with telephone poles where you put an anchor right in the
ground. Yep. And you might consider some pruning to bring it back to center. In other words, why did it fall that way?
Yep.
Possibly because it's heavier on that end.
Yep.
It's Gardening Today on the show, 800-348-2551. This email from Nancy in Albany. A friend gave me 2 buckets of rich compost. I don't know anything about gardening, except when I learned from this show. I'd like to use it on a couple of my trees and some shrubs that could use a boost. How do I do it? Spread it close to the trunk? Do I need to water it in? What month is best to do it? Any advice is welcome. That's from Nancy in Albany.
Well, that's, doesn't really that's matter when you do it, I don't think, do you?
I mean, you want to remove the sod that's growing around that tree or shrub, or make sure that there isn't any, and then add 2 or 3 inches to a circled area that's if you went out probably 30 inches, that would be a nice kind of happy medium on almost anything. You can go farther if you like to. You know, if it's a 6-inch tree, you could go out 4 feet, use up both buckets. But
you want to be careful not to go too deep. 2 or 3 inches is great.
That's right.
We get that question a lot of times, should I water this in? And what I say to people is it's got no place to go but down.
That's the truth.
So you really don't have to water things in generally because they're going to be down there eventually.
Yep, and a lot of folks think, hey, how do I get that incorporated into the soil? Do I have to dig it in? And the reason, the same exact thing that Bob just said, it's going down in the soil on its own. Top dressing with compost, top dressing with any kind of organic mulches has a vertical action in the soil. It takes a little while, but those particulates are getting in there. And when they do that, they're helping to improve sometimes soil structure. And it's a good way to improve soil structure when you have those situations. But one thing I will caution people to do is to check the pH of compost because pH varies. Compost is not a general term. It varies a real lot. Our compost at home that we use, really good compost, but it runs really with a low pH. We are running about a 3.5-4 on our compost, but our soil is of 7.2. And when you add those two things together for our vegetable garden, which is the only place we're using it, it works with fantastic results.
A lot of times it's the municipal compost where the municipalities pick up all the leaves and stuff often has a very high pH.
Right.
Exactly.
And you sulfur to bring it down because it's way off.
Exactly. So check the pH, and how do you do it? If you're in New York, you go to Cooperative Extension. You can also buy a quick test kit. They're inexpensive, and you don't need to get a really high-tech kit to get it. You can just generalize. You don't need to get to the point 0.00, all you really need to know is 6.5, 6.3. You're going to get the general idea of what you've got. And sometimes changing the pH can have one plant that's doing good 1 year, 3 years later, it's not doing so good. What happened? Could be the compost.
And as you said, what's good? What's kind of an ideal pH? And that's slightly acidic, right?
So slightly acidic overall is probably where most plants like 6.0 is a real nice number.
The one thing I'd caution people on a lot of the kits, and we sell them too, is they don't have a high range indicator. So it might come up and say you're 7, but you might be 8, and you don't know it with the kit that you buy. So sometimes you want to get a little bit better analysis.
Yep, and if you research them, you'll see there's an arsenal of different types of pH tests, and you can spend a lot of money on them, but you don't need to spend a real lot to get a fairly accurate meter.
All right, one more email. We have about a minute here before our first break, and then we will go to the phones. It is Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. Lisa wrote in, Lisa from Stillwater, that Lisa. I had several beautiful large bushes of lavender, but they all died last year. Someone told me it was due to lack of snowpack. Is that true? I really miss it. I'd love to replace it. Is there anything I can do to protect it?
It's variety dependent because not all lavender is winter hardy in this area. So it may have indirectly been related to a lack of snowpack, that if you had snow cover, since that's an insulator for plants, that may have been why it was okay in previous years, but not last winter. And if it's an open winter and it goes down to 20 below, you're more likely to get damage to plants like that than if it's an open winter and only goes down to 10. So she could replace it, but she should make sure that she looks for specific varieties that are cold hardy for this area.
Fair enough. Let's take a quick break here. Gardening on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, Dale Isler Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward join us, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's the gardening show today. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's go right to the phones. And Ann in Durham, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Hey, pretty good. How are you?
I am fine. Happy that the snow is melting. I have a dumb question. I am growing snapdragons, various varieties, in soil blocks, and I want to know when the proper time is to plant them. Our field won't be friable until May.
Yeah, well, they're pretty cold tolerant, but if they're inside and they're just beginning to grow, now that you're going to want to harden them off at some point. I think in general, waiting until the 1st of May is probably not a bad idea. You're not going to gain anything by planting them sooner, but you can definitely be putting them in by early May by just making sure that, about 10 days before, you get them outside, you let them see the weather, get a little cool, feel the wind, and if we're going to have a freeze, you put them back inside for the night, and if we're not going to have a freeze, you leave them out.
Great. Thank you so much.
And thanks for the call. That was the quickest gardening show call we ever had. That was great. 800-348-2551. Tad in Bennington. Tad, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the show. I always learn a lot from you folks.
Thank you.
My question has to do with, I have some ever-bearing fall gold raspberries, and normally at this time, about this time of year, I pr- prune the dead canes out, cut the live canes back to about knee high, and I get a fairly decent crop in June and hardly any in the fall. And I just wondered if there's a way I can prune them so I get one decent crop in the season. Thanks.
Sure. So the fall gold, as you mentioned, it's a fall bearing variety. And so you should just prune all of those down to the ground. All the raspberries that I grow at the berry patch are fall bearing. And at this time of year, we're in there in our tunnel, just cutting everything down to the ground, because then all the growth goes into the new canes that will come up this year and bear the fruit on the end of the new canes. So just manage them only as a fall bearer and not try to worry about getting that summer crop.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Wow.
And do you find, Dale, that summer crops tend to mold pretty quickly relative to fall crops?
Summer crops, you know, it all is totally weather dependent when they're ripening. They're a little more likely to mold because they're on the lower branches, which are inside the canopy more. So there's not the drying air around them and such. Fall gold especially is a little more prone to mold than some of the red varieties. It's a little softer.
Right.
But it really depends on each person's individual site.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Gardening Today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, Gardening Destination in Great Barrington. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance. And before we go to the next call, Fred, my intelligence operatives tell me that you are now an after-dinner speaker. What's up with that, man?
You know, I guess I'm sought after, right?
Really? I mean, you're giving you're giving presentations.
He's modest, too.
Right?
I'm giving a lot of presentations.
What's going on?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, and I can't get enough of it. And I think the word's been getting out. And, you know, with the discovery of the biggest tree in New York here to wrap up my 22 season, I have had a lot of engagements with speaking engagements, and I've had a lot of people reaching out to get more information about stuff like that. But you know, I'm speaking, if anyone's interested, I'm speaking at the upcoming Capital District Flower Show here in Albany.
Do you have to wear a tux for that?
No, I you know, this is my dress outfit.
Okay,
here.
So you know, that's the Arboretum tux that you have this, on.
Yeah, the tree man would not be looking right unless
right,
you know, there's an occasion I have to wear a suit.
Okay.
But for rare all practical occasion. Purposes, this is what you see is what you get.
So when is the flower show?
Yeah, so the flower show, it's going to be coming up. It's at it's in Troy, and it's March 24th through 26th, and I'm speaking all 3 days. So it'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I'm doing two talks a day. And I'm also going to so I'll be there all weekend, and the titles of the talks will be basically pruning, promoting plant health through proper pruning, improving soils for better results in all locations, and of course, New York's biggest and oldest trees.
Okay. Now, two of those topics are not related to flowers. So what's up with that?
Well, the flower shows has a lot to do with plants, woody plants,
okay.
Very much like this is a garden show, but how many times do we get tree questions? Because trees are part of the landscape. We like to call them the backbone of the landscape.
Fair enough.
Those flowers are a lot of accents. They make them pretty.
Fred Bregley is here, and Bob Graves, Greg Ward, Dale Island Riggs. Why don't we go back to the phones? And Lynn is in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're on.
Hello. Yes. Hi. Thanks, Ray, for taking my call.
You bet.
Yeah, I have a question about my periwinkle. And you know, it gets a lot of leaves in it in the fall, and I'm not sure if I blow them out in the fall, if it's going to ruin the buds for spring, or if I should blow them out in the spring.
Well, I'd be inclined to clean them out in the fall so they don't stay quite so wet, wouldn't you, Greg?
Yeah. Yeah, I think doing it in the fall works really well. I don't think you have to worry at all about flower bud damage for winter. They're pretty
Oh, it's hard to hear you.
Oh, we'll come a little closer.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So, yeah, as Bob said, cleaning them out in the fall would probably be the better situation, and I wouldn't worry about the hardiness of the buds. They're very hardy.
Okay, good, good. Thank you. I had another question quickly about the pH. I have moss growing all over my yard. The pH has got to be rather acid. And you mentioned different kinds of compost to put on, and I was wondering what pH I'd put on it to reduce its pH.
Don't assume, number one, what your pH is unless you get it tested, because you don't know. What I see most often when I see people with a lot of moss is, number one, it's shady. Number two, it's damp. Number three, there's low fertility.
Yep.
And by definition, if the pH is off, the fertility is low because the plant can't access what's there. But often what we see is the pH is too high.
Ah.
You're assuming it's too low. You don't know that. So, you know, people assume, gee, if my pH is off, all I do is I put lime on. And if its pH is high already, it's going to make it worse.
Yep.
So get it tested. But, again, if it's a real shady area, you're lucky you got moss.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. And now we go to Rosendale, New York. Hello, Sharon. Hello, Sharon.
Hello.
Oh, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
You betcha.
Hi. So I have a question about a serviceberry tree. We planted it about 4 years ago, and it's not doing great. Last year we discovered, I don't know what they're called, woolly mites or something. We're eating all the leaves. So I did some kind of natural treatment where I had to spray it every week or so. And then, I don't know, it didn't get better, but then it was fall and then the leaves fell off anyway. So is there anything I should do to try to make it come back more healthy this year?
Yep. So there are a few ways to kill trees or make them not do too well. One of them would be planting it incorrectly. It sounds easy enough to do, but I, over the years of looking at plants and many different yards and countless different installations, I see more problems with installations than in terms of being done incorrectly than correctly, probably as an overall statement. Now, that's a pretty big statement.
Yes.
But, you know, so one of them, how do you mess them up? Well, first off, you plant them too deep. It's real easy to overdig a hole, and you want to have that root flare where the trunk and roots meet right at ground level or slightly above. I've never seen a plant with a problem from being planted too high. But if that's even just a little bit too low, it's going to affect the way that the plant performs. It will not do as well. It'll become more stressed, and when it becomes more stressed, it becomes more prone to problems. And you mentioned a woolly mite. It's probably a woolly aphid, is what I'm thinking. And that's not the reason why your plant's not doing well.
She did say it's been 40 years, so that's
Years.
Four years.
So it hasn't done good for four years. That means I'm thinking the installation might have been either too
deep.
4 years,
that's possible.
The other thing is nothing to do with you. It's do you know if the plant was purchased as a container or was it ball and burlapped or a bare root? How did you get that plant and how was it installed?
I don't know. Somebody else planted it.
Okay, so the
I do know it was a little bit too deep. One of my friends had suggested that I should dig out the roots and let them get more light. So I did do that as well.
So it's not light; it's air, and the above ground portion, root flare, the cells of that have evolved to be dry. They don't mind a rain, but they don't like to be under constant moisture. So the above ground part of the plant, including that root flare, needs to be basically, it gets wet during rain, but otherwise it's dry. If you dry a root out, the root dies. So the cells that have evolved on roots are designed to be under constant moisture. So you're basically putting a part of the plant that likes to be constantly dry and making it be under constant moisture. So it's going to be a stressor. The other thing is plants are generally installed by bare root, containerized, or bald and burlapped. So we're going to assume that it's not bare root. It's most likely containerized and or bald and burlapped. And a lot of times those containerized plants have root dysfunctions. You'll see them spiraling around in containers. And if you install it like that, you end up with a major root dysfunction. It never stretches out and gets into the ground and can never get established. So that could be a problem.
Only thing I would add to this is that serviceberry are notorious for taking a long time to establish, especially the tree form ones, the ones that I assume that we're talking about this one with just one trunk. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so,
well, I mean, I guess it's more tree shaped, but I guess it actually has like three trunks.
So there are three stems coming off that maybe at 2 or 3 inches off the ground. There's one trunk and then it splits. They're not coming out of the ground separately.
Or are they?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not looking at it right now, and
so,
I don't remember.
Yeah, so it, you know, it very well still could be a little deep, and if you've pulled away the soil to expose the root flare, that's great. But they are very slow to take, and I would also just consider doing what we, I think, talked about in the beginning, is making sure there's no sod around the tree, that you've cleaned that out nicely, and you add either a little bit of mulch or some kind of compost and a complete fertilizer. Because they more typically show a spider mite, not a woolly aphid, but a spider mite by mid or early summer, which causes sort of a rusting of the leaf, and then the leaves drop early in August. So all of that is not atypical for a service berry. They can definitely be losing their leaves by late August and still be perfectly fine. But increasing vigor is where I was going with that.
Yep, and there's some great diagrams online. If you go to treesaregood.org, it's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. It's a free site, and you can go there. You can get research-based information, which is always good information as opposed to speculation information.
And if it's multiple stemmed, it may decide to start sending up additional shoots at the base. And that's not to be confused with a single stem, which are often grafted at the base. Okay, so if it is truly a single stem, you want to make sure that doesn't happen. But if it's multiple stemmed, letting more stems come up is not a bad thing.
Anybody? No. Good. Gardening today on the show, 800-348-2551, the number. We go to Dalton, Massachusetts already, and it's Dennis. You're on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The main reason I'm calling is I have a large forsythia hedge. It's probably 8 foot tall and 100 foot long and probably 8 foot crown on it. And it was completely flattened by the storm, and I'm looking for suggestions on what to do with it.
Well, I think at this point I'd leave it alone, wouldn't you, Fred?
Yes, I would.
It may cause more damage by going in there now. And wait to see how much pops up, and I think Fred will agree with me that what you really want to do with forsythia is go in and trim the older wood right back down to the ground so that it can rejuvenate itself again, like we talked about with the lilacs.
Yep. The good news is that it's coming at a time that, you know, if it recently broke, it's going to wake up. It's a good time to kind of rejuvenate stuff. Your forsythia is tough. If you're a little patient with corrective pruning, a little bit of patience, like I mentioned, you're going to get that all back. It'll all come back. So you're not going to lose it. It's just going to take a little bit of corrective pruning, and you might have to shorten some things and let others just grow to kind of get a balance. And then once you kind of got the plant back to all the plants, back to the kind of rough height that you kind of want it, then you can come back in and do some selective pruning again. So pruning will definitely help you get it back, and I have no doubt that you're going to get that to live
too. And so it's quite possible that it's just bent, that there's minimal breakage.
May pop up.
That's true. Right? A lot of that stuff will.
Dalton, and Dalton is in the 24 plus inch range of this storm, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. Say it definitely could just.
Yeah, I've got some shrubs that are flat, but they're going to come right back.
Yeah, and like Bob said, you know, have some patience with it. Let it kind of let all the snow melt, let the spring sort of start to happen, let growth come. It might not look as bad as it does now by another month from now or two.
All right, Dennis, thanks for the call. It's Gardening Today. We'll grab one more here before the next break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Peter is in Amherst. Peter, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. We had a bad storm, and I got a 30-year-old Japanese maple tree. The pine tree right next to it dropped some pretty heavy branches onto it and knocked two of the branches off the Japanese maple. What's my course of action to save this tree?
So you're going to want to do some corrective pruning, most likely. It's hard to say exactly what you would do because I don't see the photos of the actual breaks. But if it was something you wanted to just shoot me an email, fred@landisarboretum.org, a couple of photos of the broken branches, I could maybe advise you a little bit more. But basically the gist of it is, if it's a broken branch and it's leaving a stub, you're going to cut back to a branch collar. And then the plant would be able to seal that off. If it stripped it from the trunk, meaning the branch broke off with the union with where the trunk was, and now it's stripped bark, it's still not the end of the road. You can do things called wound tracing or corrective type measures where we can stimulate that plant wound wood response to help cover that over as well. So in both cases, if it happened recently, this is the time to start making moves. It's a good time to do it. So if you wanted to follow up with a couple of email photos, fred@landisarboretum.org, I'd be happy to tell you more.
Oh, that's great. Excellent. Well, great. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
All right. Thanks for the call. Anybody else want to weigh in on that one?
Well, and I think the main thing is to make those cuts so that the tree has an opportunity, as Fred says, to heal over those areas. Mm. It may not be too bad, but it could be awful. You don't know until you see what you've got.
Yeah. And good, again, good diagrams, free, treesaregood.org. You'll see tons of diagrams on how to make pruning cuts.
In general, when if a branch cracks off, it's very difficult to secure it back and have it grow back on.
That's correct.
As Fred's indicated, it's not like our bones. Our bones heal, but all this tree has is a skin.
Yeah.
And that doesn't often support. If it's really cracked and broken, better off to take it.
Fair enough. One email. Actually, that was so quick, we actually have a minute here. So I'll grab an email from Fred in Gilderland who wishes to apply pre-emergence to his lawn. I don't want to fertilize, says Fred, at the time. What are my alternatives?
Well, if you're looking for an organic, corn gluten is basically the only way to go. It isn't 100% effective, but it is an organic way. The other thing you could do is get a pre-emergent crabgrass preventer without fertilizer, and there are a number of different ones.
Anybody else?
So pre-emergents are herbicides that control the germination of seeds, unwanted, ideally, seeds in your lawn primarily. They are products for gardens as well. And so they're applied before the germination occurs,
right?
And typically that's April.
So one of the difficulties we see in the past, if you put something down in April, usually it took care of it for the season. But we're seeing an extended period of crabgrass germination. So sometimes crabgrass germinates in July, and your product doesn't work anymore no matter what it was. So sometimes you have to do it more than once.
Wow. So if I want to get rid of my crabgrass, which is basically
early.
My whole lawn, I would do it in April.
You got to do it early.
This is great. I've been doing this show
so many
years.
It's an annual grass. It dies. It comes back from
Let's take a break here. This is very exciting. 800-348-2551. Gardening will be back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today with Fred, Bob, Dale, Isla, and Greg. And this email from Renee in Bethlehem, New York. A creeping Charlie has invaded almost our entire front lawn. Spread to some of my neighbors, too. Any recommendations on how to get rid of it, not including taking up the entire lawn? Desperate to see it gone or controlled. And that's from Renee in Bethlehem.
It is.
Why don't you turn your microphone? It's a union thing, but why don't you turn your own microphone on there? Zach had to. There you are. He's got it.
Wow. Thanks.
It's not a union thing.
Thanks.
Nope. Okay. So anyway, you were saying, Greg.
What was I saying? Creeping Charlie. If you got a lot of it, you should try to rake it out. Creeping Charlie is this little scalloped leafed thing with little blue flowers that grows in your lawn, and it usually grows in places that you were not nice to the grass to begin with. The ground got a little beat up, you cut it too low, maybe your kids rode their bikes all over it for several times and it got compacted, and then what jumps in there, if it isn't crabgrass, it's Creeping Charlie. So renovating those areas by pulling it up, loosening the soil, adding maybe a little compost and reseeding, it would be the
again,
best way
check
to
the pH, and you may want to overseed after you chew it up. As Greg said, you may want to overseed with some perennial rye, and one of the best ways to improve a lawn is to keep reseeding it with a good grass so that the grass outcompetes the weeds. You can use broadleaf weed killers, but it's a hard thing to get rid of.
And if it's real compacted, you guys would probably recommend maybe aeration a little bit to help give the grass more of a chance than the Creeping Charlie
aerate and then reseed.
Then reseed.
What does Creeping Charlie look like again?
It's pretty common weed.
Did you put it in there? It's it has
did
a little.
I put it in there? No, no. We go au naturel in my lawn.
It has
it's
a
probably
little
there.
Sort of
probably have it.
Scalloped leaf. When I say that, it's just sort of little oval edges. It stays low. It's vining. I mean,
It creeps.
It you know it starts here. And heads over
that.
And reroutes as it goes.
It's beautiful.
And it has a little blue flower.
Yeah, I like it.
Most lawns probably have some percentage of it, unless you're really taking care of your lawn pretty impeccably. I mean,
let me ask you
all
a question.
We've got it all over the place.
We have to go to the phones again, but what is it that everybody has against weeds? Why they're green, they're lovely. What's wrong?
Well, you know, the definition of a weed is any plant in a spot where you don't want it. So theoretically, anything could be a weed by that definition.
You know, when I was in school, I should have done a dissertation on the American male and his obsession with his lawn.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're in this business, it's nuts. People go absolutely crazy.
Well, you took that right to the bank, though, right?
This
is what it's all about.
You know, I grew up on a farm, and if it was green and it grew, you mowed it.
There's a big difference between a weed, and, you know, a lot of people think weed, which by definition is a plant in a spot you don't want. It's not the same as an invasive species or an invasive plant. And that's, you know, a lot of times people think weeds are invasive, but they're not invasive. They're colonizing a spot that maybe they're more of an opportunistic grower than they are invasive. So although some invasive plants are clearly weeds, I mean, if you look at our property, we've got garlic mustard.
Some people
everywhere.
Nuts over dandelions, and some people harvest them and eat them
and make wine out of them. That's terrible wine.
Yeah,
too.
Wine.
Plus, you can bread those flowers and make fritters out of them. The dandelion flowers breaded and fried. Forget about it.
Let's get back to the phones.
You started.
You asked for it.
Right, we're going to go to Schenectady and Nancy. You're on, Nancy.
Hi. I'm going back to the raspberry question. I also have the ever-bearing, quote-unquote, ever-bearing raspberries, which produce a crop in early summer and again in mid-fall. And the suggestion I heard would have turned them into basically just the fall crop. My worry with that is that with mine, at least, the fall crop is so late in the fall that a lot of them actually freeze before they ever ripen. And so I would hesitate to follow the advice to do it that way. My spring crop, early summer crop, has generally been fairly wonderful. I mean, this past spring, though, it was really disappointing. And I had a lot more in the fall, but again, they died before, I mean, they got frosted before they ever ripened, a lot of them. It was a moderate crop that did not freeze. So I don't know. I was wondering also, with the spring crop being so small, I was just wondering if it was because spring was so dry last year, and maybe if I kept it watered early in the year and made sure that it didn't get too dry, then perhaps the spring crop would have been as good as normal. But
certainly,
I don't know.
Certainly, it all depends on what variety you have. A lot of home gardeners have a variety called Heritage as their fall raspberry, and that variety is really too late for our climate here to get a large proportion of the berries off it. So there are varieties of fall bearers that will start to bear in early to mid-August, and then you're able to get...
No, mine are not.
Yeah. So you're able to get a much larger crop off the ones that start earlier in the season. So, you know, it all depends when you want those raspberries. If you want them in July and a few in the fall, certainly by all means continue to keep the overwintering canes. And you still need to cut off the part that had fruited the previous fall, because that will not put out flower buds.
I've done that.
Yep. So the other thing is that raspberries tend to have a pretty high requirement for fertilizer, especially the fall raspberries. So to give them a shot of fertilizer in early to mid-May, when they're starting to grow and when those canes are about 6 to 12 inches tall, give them a shot of fertilizer or compost. And then again, when they're done their summer crop, to give them another shot of fertilizer will also help. And certainly keep them well watered. We water our raspberries four times a week.
Yeah, when we have that kind of summer like we had last year, I mean, you really needed the supplemental.
Doesn't matter what
water
you're growing. When it was dry.
That was dry. That was the driest I've seen it in 25 years of me working at the Arboretum.
And then for that fall freeze issue, could consider some kind of row cover that would take the edge off of any light frost. So something, some kind of blanket that you would put over them. A Rime was the brand name that's just a floating row cover that would work.
Absolutely. And you can make a simple hoop structure over them out of PVC pipe to hold up that row cover, and that'll add a couple degrees protection as well.
Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Dale Eiler Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. And let's go to Kingston. Ed, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, my question's about zucchini. The last few years we grew zucchini, and the plants looked healthy. The leaves had a lot of flowers, but no zucchinis. What's up with that?
So zucchini is a plant that produces female flowers separate from the male flowers. So a lot of people say, oh, well, my zucchini had a lot of flowers on it, but I didn't get much fruit, which means that it's not producing the female flowers. It's only producing the male flowers, which are just on the end of the stalk. The female flowers have a little tiny baby zucchini behind them, so they're pretty easy to tell apart. Often the zucchini plants will produce male flowers often for about 10 days to 2 weeks before they start to produce female flowers. I suspect that maybe there was a nutritional imbalance. Also, weather can have a big impact. Night temperatures especially can have a big impact on whether that family of plants is producing female flowers or male flowers. So another year, it may be entirely different.
Is there any fertilization? Is that why lack of fertilization? You need male and female?
Well, if the plant is not producing the female flowers to begin with, that's where the problem is. So if it's not producing the females, that's where your soil fertilization could make a difference. And I would have a soil test done to see if there's any certain nutrients that you're lacking.
The
bees are going to be out there pollinating the female flowers with the pollen from the male flowers if they're both there at the same time.
It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551 is the number. Ethan is in Saratoga. Ethan, you're up.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My question regarding bare root trees. I just got an order in. I ordered them last fall. I didn't expect them quite so early, and given the storm and particular injury I have, I can't get them in the ground right away. So I'm trying to figure out a way to keep them alive and healthy enough to maybe get them in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks, hopefully. I'm just looking for a way to keep my bare root trees alive for that long.
What we used to do is it will put them in a cool structure somewhere where they're protected and out of the sun and the wind, and try to keep the roots moist. Either put some straw around them or some burlap and water them down. As long as you keep them cool and keep the roots moist, you can keep them there for 2 or 3 weeks easily.
Easily, yep. Yeah. We do the same thing at the Arboretum when we get bare root, and we have no problem holding them for weeks. It's just a matter of what Bob said, dark, cool, and definitely moist roots. If any of those three things aren't happening, you'll have problems with the bare roots.
It's a normal procedure.
Otherwise, they're cold stored when they harvest these things for an extended amount of time. They're basically sleeping. So what you're trying to do is
keep them asleep from waking up.
I was worried because two varieties already have leaf buds on them. And so that's why I was worried if I I've also read some things about bare root trees since I've ordered them, and I was wondering, is that the right route to go? Are bare root trees versus potted trees? These are all fruit trees I've ordered. I got three apple, two peach, and a pear.
So I love that question. That's a great one. So because there's three main ways that plants are basically purchased: bare root, potted, which are in containers, or burled and burlapped. And of all of those three, they all have advantages and disadvantages. My favorite is bare root by far. It's more bang for your buck. You're going to pay less, and also you get to see the root structure. So the root dysfunctions that you see from containerized plants and bald and burlap plants are not going to happen with bare root, because you're going to see the whole root system. And if there's a defect, you're correcting it before it goes in the ground. So as we mentioned to other colors, and as we always, you know, sort of preach, make sure that that root flare, place where the tree's trunk and the roots meet, is right at ground level or a little bit higher, and try not to overdig the hole on bare root. It's easy to overdig on any plant. It's really easy to overdig. So I always say measure twice, dig once. And, you know, I have a good eye. I like to think I can dig the right depth without measuring it. And boy, oh boy, am I proven wrong time and time again. You know, dig the hole. Use a stick. Use something that goes across the hole, like the handle of your shovel or a piece of pipe. Or a piece of 2x4, go across the hole and then go straight down from that with a stick and look at that ground level and look at your root. And what you're going to find is you're going to be digging wide holes, 2 to 3 times the width of that root ball, but never any deeper. And you do that, you're going to be in good shape. But, you know, they're all good, but bare root's one of my favorite ways to plant. The problem with bare root is you only get a couple of times to do it, and you have to be careful how you handle it.
Yeah, so I was just going to say they probably came in a box completely wrapped with some newspaper or some kind of
maybe a hydrogel
wet material,
possibly.
And then wrapped in plastic on the outside before the box. Is that correct?
Oh, we lost them.
Okay, so if that's correct, that's often the best way to store
them.
Certainly open it up, count them, take a look and see, make sure everything's in good shape, then put them all back in the box and put them in the coolest but not freezing spot you have.
All right, let's quickly go to Michelle in, is it East Greenbush?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I've got 3 blackcurrant bushes, and I don't know how to prune them or distinguish the old wood from the new, and I also wanted to know how to keep them healthy.
All right, we have about 3 minutes, gang.
Yeah, there's not a lot of pruning that I have ever had to deal with currants, that the old wood will be older. But they're flowering off of last year's wood, I believe. When they come, you know, if you're not sure on what's happening with the plant, when they come into leaf and then flower, look through them. And if there's any dry wood or any wood that just isn't doing anything, any heavy wood, certainly you could prune it out then. So that would be May, June, but some light thinning would be really all I think you need to do.
Yep. Maybe look at crossing branches. Sometimes you'll see branches that are rubbing. Those could be selectively ones to remove.
Yeah, and then just you know, they're really actually quite easy. So
they are.
A nice mulched area, a nice sunny spot, and you know, the bluebirds like them too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. That's great to know. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the program. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, all right, we have time for an email here. I love this one. It's getting to be that time. Potential lawn problem. This is from Anonymous. I can't tell from the email address what their name is. I decided to feed the birds this winter. I now have moles already making tunnels under the grass and snow near the bird feeder. How can I effectively get rid of the moles before I have a large number of them this spring?
So
you're not sure what you have.
It's probably not moles.
Correct.
It's probably voles or field mice
making
little tunnels running to the seed. I wouldn't worry about them at all. They're somewhere in your yard anyway.
The voles?
The voles, yeah. They just
they're
came.
Not good though, right?
You know,
they eat plants.
We could do a whole show on voles.
Yeah.
We don't like them really.
No.
But what's more important is where you put the seed. The sunflower hulls will inhibit seed germination of other plants, of course. So you will have this bearish spot, and you will want to rake up all of that stuff as soon as the snow is gone, and then reseed.
The easiest way, if you want to get rid of the voles, is mouse traps. And put a bucket or a trash can upside down over the top of them, and they'll come inside there and get caught in a trap.
Yeah, I use a plant container cut in half, and so it's like a little micro
just
tunnel.
So that the birds and the cats don't get
only a vole or a mouse could go in. And they're not, you know, not the same as moles. Moles are
moles
not eating
not,
your plants. And, you know, for the most part, I don't have a big problem with moles.
They eat the grubs, right?
They do eat grubs. Yep, they do.
Yeah, we put out long pipes, PVC pipe.
Oh, yeah,
and
you
put,
said that before.
Put mouse traps in them.
In them. That's a really
good
idea.
That's another
good
one, sure.
Yeah. Genius. All right. Well, I guess we're about out of time. Hey, anything going on at Ward's Nursery?
Well, spring is coming. We, you know, the greenhouse is filling up with lots of, we've got one side completely full of hanging baskets and 4.5-inch pots and of annuals. And then the other side is for your wandering pleasure, a little tropical,
oh,
little
cool.
spring it's very nice.
I've been looking for some wandering pleasure. That's hey, Bob, what is going on over at Fatigan's?
Well, it's still houseplant season. A lot of folks are in buying tropical plants, but everybody's looking for a little something flowering now. A little daffodil, a little crocus, a little Gerber daisy. There's a lot of stuff starting to flower. And probably next week we'll start seeing pansies.
Oh, that's exciting. And I assume the Berry Patchdale Isla is rocking and rolling.
It's rocking and rolling slowly. We've got some fresh greens that we'll start harvesting in probably about 10 days, but we are planting and seeding away.
All right, Fred, if you can tell me in 12 seconds what's going on at the Landis.
Yeah, I guess the big one is, you know, we're gearing up for the Capital District Flower Show next weekend. I'll be there all 3 days giving talks. Go to flowerandgardenexpo.com for details.
Now, if you hear somebody yelling Freebird in the back at one of your talks, it's going to be me.
All right. Fair enough. And, you know, we do ask you to silence your cell phones, but flash photography is still allowed.
All right. Thank you all for being here. Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales, service, and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for joining us today. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the calls. Now we're back on the two-week schedule. This gang will be back in 2 weeks. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Oh, it's going to be a beer fest.